Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the second session of our summer discussions on climate change. This morning, we're lucky to have two very, very well-prepared, educated, experienced speakers. Just a quick preview, somewhere in February, maybe, Sue Weibel called and said, "Hey, these guys are going to be speaking at a local church and a meeting of the Isaac Walton League. You want to go and see?" So we did, and they were amazing. And we thought, I wonder if there's any possibility that they would come and speak for us. And so Sue, who everybody thinks is really shy, walked up to them and asked, and they said yes. And so, or they said, "We'll talk." And so anyway, they're here. Larry Schweiger is our first speaker, and he's been involved in conservation and environmental preservation efforts for his whole life. You all have a handout that has some of the information, even that is abbreviated, but one of the things that I noted was that he was involved in the passage of the 1990 Clean Air Act. He's received many awards for his work, authored two books, including the most recent one, A Grandfather's Lament, The Betrayal of Our Children, and you can read other things about him in your handout. Dr. Ned Kettier is a retired, he'll be our second speaker. He's a retired pediatrician who has studied the effects of the environment on health. He's a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics Council on Environmental Health, and you can read more about him in the bio that I handed out. You'll find there that he serves as a board member for Physicians for Social Responsibility in Pennsylvania. So this is very exciting. Before we begin, let's have a word of prayer. Please pray with me. God of us all, we thank you for sending our guests who will lead us this morning in this important study of your creation. Open our minds and hearts to learning about your world and our place in it. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Okay.
Good morning. Good morning. It's good to be here today. I don't think I need that. I've got a mic on. I shut it off in the bottom.
You know, we might need it if people have a question.
Okay, well, I'll shut it off and then, so it doesn't get feedback. I've titled my presentation this morning, A Moral Moment. And for me, climate change is not a scientific issue. It's not a technical issue. It's a moral issue. It's a spiritual issue that this country faces. So I'm pleased to be here at a church to talk about that. I have long believed that it has been a spiritual issue. From my faith tradition, a good person leaves an inheritance to their children's children. And that was to be the title of my up-and-coming book. It's been changed now, and I'll tell you more about that later. But I firmly believe that parents care for their children, will do anything for their children's future, and yet we're destroying our children's future, and I'll talk more about that. I think we all have a rightful role as stewards of our natural world. I think the scriptures are very clear about that. When Zondervan came out with their Green Bible, they asked me to endorse it because of my work with the National Religious Partnership for the Environment and the Evangelical Environmental Network. So I did, in fact, endorse this. And I would urge, if you're interested in that sort of thing, get a copy of the Green Bible. It's still available from Zondervan, and it's in an NIV form for those who use NIV. This statement by Savon Arrhenius talks about the fact that we're evaporating our coal mines into the air, adding so much carbon dioxide into the air as to change the transparency of the atmosphere. With each passing year, air must be trapping more and more dark, that's what they called it back in those days, infrared rays, and more earth light. He developed this warning in 1896, and it was based on work that was done in part here in Pittsburgh by Dr. John Brashear and Samuel Pierpoint Langley, who developed a spectrobolometer to actually start measuring carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So we've known for a long time. In fact, his predictions, the predictions of Arrhenius, he suggested we'd see a 2-degree rise in temperature if we continue to burn coal the way we were. And of course, that's in fact what we're facing today. We're actually adding more carbon dioxide to the air today than we were even 26 years ago when the first conference on the environment focused on climate change was held. So while we've had 25 years of talking, we've had no action to speak of. It's actually getting much worse today than it was. The trend is unmistakable. The science is very clear. We've now have more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than we've had for now 3 million years, according to most recent publications. So we're really changing the nature of our atmosphere, and by doing that, we're changing the nature of our world. July is on track to be the hottest month since record keeping has begun. So we're now seeing the beginnings of what will come for our children. Alaska has seen tremendous increase in temperature. Look, the waters around Alaska are now over 7 degrees warmer than they should be normally. So Alaska is seeing this incredible warming of its waters, and of course that's melting the Arctic. And this is in Siberia. These hunters came across this bubble, but it's a bubble that's occurring literally in thousands of places across Siberia, across Canada, northern Canada, and Alaska. These are methane bubbles that are being produced, and when snow and ice come, the methane under the wetlands that are being created, these lakes that are forming in the Arctic are now holding much more methane.
Oh my God.
Wetlands should not be doing this, but they are throughout the Arctic. Methane is a much more concentrated form of heat-trapping gas per molecule than carbon dioxide. So we really need to be concerned about nature getting into the act in a big way, following our abuse of the planet. Incidentally, that was Dr. Katie Walters, who is at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. Katie got some singed eyebrows out of it, but she's okay. But the planet's not going to be. We're also seeing these explosions that are occurring in Siberia. This is actually one recent occurrence of that, where the methane, for whatever reason, has been discharged by perhaps a lightning strike or some other electrical discharge and blows these massive holes into the Arctic, into the Siberian tundra. Scientists have been warning us for a long time. We now have 10 years to bend the curve very sharply in the direction of least carbon. And yet, in fact, instead of doing that, we're going the other way. If we continue on the path that we're on, Pennsylvania will experience about 26 to 50 days with over 90 degree heat index by mid-century. So it means my grandkids and your grandkids will be facing a much, much more adverse environment in the years ahead. We're also seeing the intensification of storms. I'm sure you've noticed that we've had a different weather pattern this year here in western Pennsylvania than we've experienced before. There are really two reasons for that. One is that the jet stream is being interrupted. It's being disturbed because of the warming of the Arctic. And so instead of having a rather smooth jet stream, we're seeing the jet stream break up and actually, in some cases, go into a circular pattern. And the other reason for this is the Gulf of Mexico. I've spent enough time on the Gulf of Mexico to discover that the Gulf itself is pretty much an entrapped body of water. It doesn't get rid of its water very easily because of the nature of the Gulf. And that water gets overheated. And right now what we're seeing is an overheated Gulf. You can follow the buoys if you find them online and check the temperatures, which I tend to do. But 93% of the global warming pollution is actually going into the oceans. So what we're experiencing today in the world is only a small part of what's actually going on. The energy is actually going into the water. But that energy doesn't stay in the water, and it comes out in this massive evaporation events that we see that gin up these terrible storms. And we've seen these rain bombs occur around the world. They're not just here in western Pennsylvania, but they're actually occurring in other places as well. In fact, very dramatically so in some places. And this is some of our local storms. This happens to be McKnight Road. This is not a normal day on McKnight Road, but it is occurring more and more. The Blue Line recently was shut down with $5 million worth of damage because of storm events. Ross Township more recently has seen flooding on Babcock Boulevard and McKnight Road. And of course, here in western Pennsylvania, when we see these incredible rainfalls, it adds, the formulation is unstable hillsides, red beds, and excess rainfall leads to landslides. And we're seeing more and more of that in the region. Environmental disasters are an increase around the world. I won't go into it, but I'll assure you that the reinsurance industry is paying attention. I've spent time with those folks, and they know what's ahead. Ticks and other disease spreading mosquitoes are moving north. This happens to be the mosquito that spreads the Zika virus, and it's on the borders of Pennsylvania now, and I suspect that we'll see it moving further north as years go on. Pennsylvania is now the epicenter of Lyme disease spread by ticks. This happens to hit home personally for me because this is one of my grandsons, and he got Lyme, I can assure you that as a grandfather, it really makes me angry that we've failed to do the right thing for our kids. Chief Justice Ron Castile said it right. Pennsylvania is not just a victim of climate change, but we're also a big perpetrator. Pennsylvania has a notable history of what appears retrospectively to have been short-sighted exploitation of its bountiful environment, affecting its minerals, its water, its air, its flora and its fauna, and its people. And of course, we've had mining in Pennsylvania for a long, long time here in the Pittsburgh area. I looked at the death certificates of all my ancestors, and every one of them that lived in Pittsburgh, and I go back six generations in Pittsburgh, every one of them had on their death certificate some form of cardiovascular disease, and they all died what I consider young, certainly younger than I am today. So none of them had air pollution on their death certificate, but in fact, that's what was one of the contributing factors. In 1937, Pennsylvania led the way by bringing a steam shovel in, and the first surface mining occurred here in not far from State College in Clearfield County. And since that time, we've seen an enormous amount of coal mining, both surface and deep mining. We've produced over 10 billion tons of coal, which equates to about 20 billion tons of carbon dioxide. So a lot of that stuff that's in the sky is actually Pennsylvania. More than $10 billion worth of unreclaimed mines are still in existence in Pennsylvania because we failed to regulate the mining industry for so many years. Pennsylvania taxpayers have spent literally hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up after the mining industry because we did not have lawmakers that were willing to regulate the mining industry when they were doing all this. Pennsylvania still provides, believe it or not, $3.2 billion a year in subsidies to the fossil fuel industry in Pennsylvania. So we are actually subsidizing an industry that's destroying our world. And it makes absolutely no sense. We gave $1.6 billion to this recent cracker plant. I won't dwell on that because I'm sure Ned will talk more about it. In 1970, when I first worked for the legislature, we produced this map that shows the number of waterways in Pennsylvania degraded by mining, by the pollution. And this is only the major waterways. So it was over 10,000 miles. Originally, it was more than that, but we had over 10,000 miles degraded by pollution. Pennsylvania also has another first. We were the first place to have a successful oil well with Drake in 1859. Pennsylvania's early oil history is quite stunning. We were putting more oil into the Allegheny River than we were bringing to Pittsburgh for refinement. So they were wasting a tremendous amount of oil in that time. And so today, we live with 475,000 to over 700,000 abandoned oil and gas wells in Pennsylvania, and they're not sealed, and they're leaking methane, and they're leaking pollution into our waterways. And so with that history, now we're committing ourselves to fracking and the consequences of horizontal drilling and the high-pressure fracking operations that are occurring around the state. In 2005, Vice President Dick Cheney, behind closed doors, worked with the industry and exempted the fracking industry from the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and a number of other environmental statutes. In addition to that, he granted in this bill the right to take private property for private purpose, which is contrary to the U.S. Constitution. Since that time, we've seen an explosion of fracking in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, you can see what's happened. You go back to 2005 when the law was passed, you can see the trend that's taken place. This is the additional carbon dioxide that gas is going to add into the system. So the story that gas is the answer to our climate problem is a joke. It's absolutely not. I won't go into the details of that, but to simply say the methane leakage rates on gas are such that we are not getting any benefit from going from coal to gas on the short term. There are 32 new gas-fired power plants being proposed, and some are already in operation. The current low cost of natural gas is closing down coal, which is okay, but it's also closing down nuclear, which is a carbon-free fuel, and we need to figure out a way to keep those units still operating or we'll have more pollution. The other thing that's happening is we're building these pipelines across the state for not public purpose, but for private purpose. And these pipelines, if you track where they're going, they're taking private property away from landowners, sometimes who have owned the land generations. And they're taking that property right away to put this pipeline in to deliver gas to Marcus Hook, which is an export facility. So we're going to be shipping our shale gas from Pennsylvania to Europe, and we're taking private property in order to do that. I think it's unconstitutional and needs to be addressed. Rachel Carson in 1950 wrote a book called The Sea Around Us. I consider it one of her great works. Everybody knows about Silent Spring and her work on that. But here, this Pittsburgh woman went on to Washington, went on to Maryland, and she wrote in 1950, the year I was born, actually, now in our own lifetime, we are witnessing a startling alteration of climate. And the reason she was able to say that was that she saw nature changing. She saw fish and wildlife moving further north than they ever had before. Working for the Fish and Wildlife Service, she was able to look at that data to show that. Today, the scientists have warned us that we may lose 40 to 70% of all the species on the planet because of what we're doing. The sixth great extinction is going to be devastating to our children, to our world. And global warming is the capstone to a number of reasons why that's occurring. Right today, plants and trees, all of wildlife needs to be moving forward at a rate of about 15 feet a day. And I've been watching the oak tree in my front yard and it hasn't moved an inch. So what's happening is that nature's getting out of sync with the warming of our world. So trees and plants must be moving north, and unfortunately for some, it won't happen. Wildlife habitat's also at risk. Of course, the Arctic's melting, so this is a symbol of that. And we're seeing, as that Arctic melts out, these resources are being lost. But other things are happening that are more subtle. Robins are arriving 10 days earlier. In fact, I see robins now all winter long. They don't actually leave anymore, it seems. Butterflies are advancing their first flight days by 24 days. Tree swallows are increasing their egg laying earlier by about 9 days. And turtles are interesting because turtles actually reproduce not with an XY chromosome for sex selection, but by temperature. So a 2-degree rise in temperature will turn all the turtle eggs into females, which is not a good thing if you're a turtle because it doesn't last for a generation. Caribou are now extinct in the lower 48. The last caribou have recently died out. Snowshoe hares that were once common in Pennsylvania are now out of Pennsylvania and moving further north. Moose are another species that are very sensitive to temperature, and they are in decline in their southern range in Minnesota and in New England. And even in Yellowstone, moose are rapidly disappearing from that original habitat. Scientists have warned us that the sage steppe habitat that is so critical for that for a number of species, including the pronghorn antelope, are rapidly decreasing. And by the end of the century, there will only be a couple counties in Wyoming that will support the species that live in that habitat. We're also seeing dramatic changes in the way water is being delivered in the Colorado and other western rivers. Pine beetles are doing damage, tremendous losses. The Canadian Forest Service has warned that their forests are now net carbon producers instead of net carbon sinks, which is quite dramatic because of the beetle damage and because of the fires and other things that are happening to the forest. Wildfires are on the increase. Wildfire season is now 105 days longer than it once was. I used this slide in a talk in California back when the governor was governor of California. And back in the green room, he said, "I have a problem with that one slide you use." I said, "What's that, governor?" He said, "Well, we don't have a fire season in California. It can burn any day of the year now. There is no such thing as a fire season in California." And of course, we've seen the damage that that has done. We were hopeful that we would be able to protect the Amazon, but recent elections in the Amazon have created a terrible situation where the head of the head of Brazil is now wanting to basically clear-cut much of the Amazon and build dams and do a number of other things, trampling over the native people that live there. Brook trout is also another example for those who fish. You can see that the southern range of the brook trout is shrinking. The only place brook trout are still thriving is in the northern states. Warmer water also means excess nutrients and more dead zones. And this year there's record dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico and elsewhere. Coral reefs and phytoplankton are also in trouble. Phytoplankton is kind of interesting, and because it's important to us, it needs calcium to reproduce. And because of that, and because of high temperatures, it's on the decline. Calcium is being tied up by the acidity in the oceans today, which is up 30%. So phytoplankton is now down 40% in the oceans. And this is the primary source of our oxygen in the planet. So the primary source of our oxygen is in decline. Now here's the good news. The cost of clean air is in our reach. The cost of clean energy is in our reach. We're seeing these dramatic drops in the price of these products. And as a result of that, we have an opportunity to go from these dirty fuels to a clean source. I won't go through the details of that, but to simply say we now have the ability to go to wind, to go to solar, and to do what other countries are already doing, and that is switching our energy system from a high carbon energy system to a low carbon energy system. California is leading the way. Very dramatic changes in California. Californians use half as much energy as the rest of us because of the energy efficiency that they've deployed. They also are seeing very dramatic declines in their carbon emissions because of the solar they're producing. There are five times as many jobs today in solar as in coal, and yet you would never hear that by our leadership. The future of fueling stations is the future of electric cars. I drove here on an electric car fueled by solar and wind, so I know what I'm talking about on this. It works. There's no reason why we can't move that way in a very fast pace. The cost of solar cells is dropping very dramatically. Wind energy is exploding and taking off. New York just recently committed to a large offshore wind project. So we must protect our forests, we must restore forests, and we must also put carbon back in our soils. It turns out that our soils once had a lot of carbon in them, and they were black. They were healthy soils. They had tremendous ability to hold water. They prevented water pollution. And so today we need to manage our soils to rebuild that carbon store in our soils. And by doing that, we'll make our soils more resistant to drought and also to extreme weather conditions like we've been having this past year. Winter cover crops are an important part of that equation. But we need to manage our soils in a strategic way to produce the kind of future that our children deserve. Some mistakes are no big deal, but climate change is not one of those. It's a mistake that will cost us a tremendous amount in the days ahead. You know, I asked the question, and I have to come back to this. If the kettle was boiling over on your stove, who in their right mind would turn the heat up? But that's, in fact, exactly what we're doing in the United States today. We're reversing our climate policies. We're advancing carbon pollution. If you look back in 2015 when President Obama was in office, we had a 2.7% reduction in carbon emissions. And today we have a 3.4% increase in carbon emissions. So I ask the question again, who in their right mind would do this? Who would allow this to happen? I had the privilege some years ago to meet Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. She was a young 94 years old when I met her. She lived to be about 105. But she is the person for which the school is named after that we all know today. And unfortunately, we've forgotten about her contribution to our world. She wrote a wonderful book on the Everglades. It's really worth reading. It won a Pulitzer Prize. But she said, be a nuisance where it counts. Do your part to inform and stimulate the public to join your action. Be depressed, discouraged, and disappointed at failure and the disheartening effects of ignorance, greed, corruption, and bad politics, but never give up. And I'm inspired by that, by those notions, and I believe very strongly that we need to do everything we can. I've had the privilege of working with former Vice President Al Gore to create the Climate Reality Project. Al and I, this is actually our first meeting talking about how we'd do this. He's now trained over 20,000 people in the world. In fact, he'll be doing a training in Minnesota here in a couple weeks. I also had the privilege of working with the late Senator John McCain. So we had a bipartisan effort to try to move the needle on climate change, but the industry stopped us from doing that. I worked with Senator Kerry and Senator Lieberman on a piece of climate legislation. We again lost that fight because the industry blocked us. When we started this fight back many years ago, a 2% reduction on an annual basis was sufficient to get us to a safe place. Today, it's going to require about a 7 to 10% reduction to get us to a safe place. And every year we wait, that curve gets steeper and steeper. So instead of having a bunny slope, we now have a black diamond to get on. And we need to do it with all sorts of new technologies as well as existing technologies. It's important to note that the oil industry spends about $200 million a year lobbying and influencing the outcome of these policies. So on one hand, they run advertisements telling you how their wind is going to solve problems and this all this nonsense that you see on television. On the other hand, they're out there buying lawmakers to keep them from doing the right thing. So they're basically destroying our children's future on purpose. And so the book title I wanted was The Betrayal of Our Children. My publisher said, no, you got to make it a little different than that. So we ended up with a climate crisis and a corrupt politics. And it gets into that. It'll be out in October, so I'm going to do a little advertisement for that now. What do we do? I always get the question, what can I do personally? Well, plant trees. I planted my yard with trees now, and they're doing very well. Put up solar panels. My house is now run on solar, and my car is now run on solar and wind. So we can do all those things. We also can garden, put carbon back into the soil by managing our gardens well, and by growing food close to home, we're also reducing the carbon footprint of our food. Organic gardening is a carbon positive approach, and we can do that to avoid the future calamities that are coming, because scientists have warned us that increasing food and water scarcity will act as a catalyst on social political instabilities to accelerate the disorder and conflict over the next three decades. And we're already seeing that right now, because the Northern Triangle, people are fleeing that because they don't have enough food, because their crops are failing. And so they're moving north into the United States. We can also support those who are working on climate legislation, on the Green New Deal and others. Let me finish by telling you that my daughter asked me to be in the delivery room when she had this little guy. And when I was 14 years old, I promised God that I would spend my life working on the environment. I didn't know what I was giving up at that point or getting. But when I had my grandson being born, I watched this little guy emerge. And I wanted to recommit myself to that promise that I made when I was 14. And so she wanted me to cut the umbilical cord. And so the doctor handed me the scissors. And I was making this recommitment. And I must have been taking too long, because he finally said to me, are you going to do this or what? But I promised this little guy and all of his brothers and his cousins that I would spend my remaining days fighting for them. And I believe very deeply that this is a moral issue, that we have an obligation to our children and to their children. It's a biblical obligation. It's a spiritual obligation. It's a moral obligation. And we need to do everything we can to protect their future. Our children and their children deserve better. Thank you.
Sir, would you please tell them the name of your book that's coming out in October?
Yeah, it's called The Climate Crisis and Corrupt Politics.
Thank you, that was terrific.
Oh, thanks. Oh, it's on the floor.
No, the microphone.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay.
I got it. Thanks. Tell you what.
Let me do that.
I got it. I'm good. I just clip this. If I can clip it.
Can I move it up for you? It might not reach you there.
There. I think that's good. I speak loud.
Okay.
Good morning, everybody. I want to thank Sue and everybody here for the invitation to be here. If I can get this going without losing a finger, we'll be good. Okay, well, that's not going to work. Okay, tell you what. Here we go. I think. Let's try
just
it again.
There you go.
Is that in tight? Here we go. Okay, I think we're set. Thanks for your patience. That's not mine. That's okay. My name is Dr. Ned Kattire. I'm a pediatrician here in the Pittsburgh area. I'm with AHN Pediatrics, Pediatric Alliance. How many of you have children? And how many of you have grandchildren? Great. As a pediatrician, I have you right where I want you. So how many of your doctors have ever talked to you about climate change and health? Have you ever gone into the office and had a discussion? Probably not. Doctors have a hard time, I think, talking about issues of environmental health and especially climate change. And that's a shame. And I think that has to change. Physicians all around the country are very concerned about the climate crisis and about the impacts on their patients' health. But finding a way to talk to our patients about it is rather difficult, and hopefully we get better at it. I try to keep things as simple as possible, and I just use 10 words to describe the climate crisis. And if you can remember these 10 words, you can discuss climate change with anybody, and we should all be talking about it a lot more. So, climate change in 10 words. Experts agree. In fact, more than 97% of climate scientists have already come to a consensus regarding climate change. There's no more debate about whether climate change is happening or what's causing climate change. That science is indeed settled. Really, what scientists are debating now is, what do we do about it? And how fast do we go? So experts agree, it's real. Climate change is not a hoax, it's actually happening. We know that climate has changed many, many times as carbon dioxide levels have changed many times throughout Earth's history. But this particular episode of climate change is different. It started around the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and it has accelerated exponentially just in the past few generations. We can see how climate has changed by looking at global temperatures. And especially in the last quarter of the last century and the beginning of this century, things have gotten much, much warmer on this map, yellower, oranger, redder. Back in 1880, this was the scene, and today this is how much we've warmed. You can see a lot of that warming going on in the northern climates, the northern regions, the Arctic Circle. And so we can see with our eyes, we can see climate change with our eyes. We can see the sea ice melting. We can see glaciers melting and receding. We can see that sea levels are rising. So experts agree it's real, and it's us. Almost all of the climate changes that we're seeing are due to human activities, specifically extracting and burning fossil fuels. You can see that emissions of greenhouse gases from burning fossil fuels took off right after the Second World War and has just been increasing, continues to increase. A few years ago, there was a little bit of a flattening of this curve, but emissions are going up once again in the last couple of years. So experts agree it's real, it's us, and it's bad, and it's getting worse. If you just turn on your TV, you can see that extreme weather catastrophes are on the increase and have been for several decades. This is happening all around the world. Extreme temperatures, like the heat wave that we're experiencing right now. You know, heat waves kill more people than all other extreme weather events combined. So you have the heat waves. You have droughts that threaten food supplies, water supplies. Wildfires are on the increase, as we saw before, causing property loss of life, and damage to the environment. Floods and mudslides are happening everywhere, including here in Pittsburgh. We see that on the news all the time. And this spring's extreme weather and flooding in the Midwest is preventing farmers from planting their crops. And storms are more energetic than ever because heat is energy. So hurricanes are stronger, producing more winds, more storm surges, more flooding. Climate change is a medical emergency, and more doctors are recognizing that and realizing that something has to be done. The impacts of climate change on health are integrated and very much related. We talked about the heat stress, heat waves, and extreme weather events, but infectious diseases are also on the rise, and the vectors, like the ticks and the mosquitoes, are expanding their range. Food and water supplies globally are being threatened by drought, by flooding, by extreme heat. Air pollution is worse as the world gets warmer and the atmosphere warms. Allergies are worse. The allergy season is longer. As a response to increased CO2, plants produce more pollen. And finally, every human who witnesses environmental degradation and destruction is going to have a mental health impact. And that's especially true of children. So who's the most vulnerable to have a health impact from climate change? It's the usual suspects, as you would imagine. But as I go through this, see if you or someone you love is on this list. Pregnant women, infants and children, they're always going to be at the top of a list like this. The elderly, the poor and the homeless. I think that goes without saying that we all understand that. People with pre-existing medical conditions, people with heart disease, lung disease, metabolic disorders like diabetes, people with kidney disease, the mentally ill, and people who work and play outdoors. These are people who are all at increased risk of having health impacts from climate change. The health impacts of climate change demand immediate action, says practically every public health and medical organization in the United States and around the world. So I want to spend a few minutes and look at each of these impacts and see what advice I can give you and your family, your children and your grandchildren, to help you get through the worst parts of climate change. So let's start with heat waves. And obviously, we're living through one now. Stay cool. If you have an air conditioner, make sure it's working properly. And hopefully, you do have an air conditioner. Think about going someplace else that's air conditioned, like a public library or a shopping mall that's air conditioned. Plan your outdoor activities carefully. Work outside, do your work outside, your activities outside early in the morning or after the sun sets in the evening. Check your water supply, and importantly, make sure you drink. Check your food supply and make sure that you eat during a heat wave. Check your other supplies as well. When you know a heat wave is coming, make sure you have enough medication. Make sure your flashlights have batteries and make sure your cell phone is charged. And very importantly, stay connected with friends and family members. It's very important that people can keep track of how you're doing, but also how you can keep track of your friends and neighbors as well and help them out too. For extreme weather, make sure you're getting weather notifications sent to your cell phone. It's very important when extreme weather is coming this way, strong thunderstorms, flash flood warnings, it's important to know what's happening. Keep supplies in stock like food and water and medicine, flashlights, and keep your cell phone charged again. Plan for extreme weather and evacuations. Rehearse and think to yourself, well, what will happen if a lightning storm comes? What's going to happen if there's flooding? What happens if I have to be evacuated? Try to rehearse those situations so that you know what you're going to do. And heed evacuation warnings. We don't get so many here along the coasts. There are more, especially along the Gulf Coast. But nevertheless, when authorities say you need to leave and go someplace safer, it's really important that we listen to those authorities. And again, stay connected to your family and your friends. Infectious diseases, be aware of ticks and mosquitoes. Lyme disease is now present in every county in Pennsylvania. Mosquitoes bring diseases like West Nile virus, Zika virus, which no one ever heard of a few years ago, yellow fever, dengue. These are risks. Use insect repellents. Don't be afraid. They're safe. DEET-containing insect repellents are safe to use. Remove standing water around your home. Turns out that mosquitoes don't travel very far from where they breed. So if you can remove standing water, if your neighbors can remove standing water, that really helps reduce the mosquito population. Seek medical attention if symptoms of vector-borne diseases develop. These are symptoms like funny rashes that you never had, fevers that are unexplained, joint pain, headaches, things that can't be explained from a simple virus. You should be calling your doctor. And stay out of floodwater. Floodwaters get contaminated with toxic chemicals, but they also harbor many microorganisms that can get us sick. For air pollution, know your zip code. Know what industries are around you. These are chronic polluting industries. We have a lot of them here in Western Pennsylvania. Probably all of you know that Allegheny County has some of the worst air quality in the country. In fact, outside of California, it has the worst air quality in the country. So know the emitters in your neighborhood. When air quality is poor, it gives you an idea of where that pollution is coming from. Keep air pollution outdoors. Seal your windows, seal your doors. Keep your windows closed, especially at night. You know, at night we like to open up our windows and let the cool air in. Unfortunately, if you live near a point source of pollution, that pollution settles at night and the wind dies down, so it doesn't push that pollution away from your house. It only allows it to come into your house. So it's important to be aware of that. Keep indoor air clean. Don't make it worse. Don't allow any smoking in your house. Make sure that your vents over your stoves are working properly. Make sure your filters on your HVAC systems, your furnaces and your air conditioners, make sure that they're changed regularly. Check your daily air quality index report. I recommend that every physician, before they leave for their office for the day, knows what the air quality is going to be like. Because on days when air quality is poor, those are days that are going to be very difficult for our patients with asthma, with COPD, with diabetes, with heart disease. Plan your time outdoors wisely. When air quality is poor, we're starting to tell schools that children should not go outside to play during recess, especially children with asthma should really stay inside. When air quality is poor, you probably don't want to be outside going for a walk or a jog. Keep rescue medicines, inhalers, medicine for nebulizers on hand. Give a hoot, don't pollute, don't make things worse. Know your allergy season for allergies. That's important. Allergy seasons are getting longer. They're getting more severe. You can check local pollen counts at the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. It's an excellent website. Keep your allergy medicines stocked. Keep your doors and windows closed to prevent the pollen from coming into your house. Change your air filters frequently. Fix your leaky roofs and windows. When water enters the home, mold can develop. And mold is a very serious problem for people who are sensitive to it. It can cause some significant symptoms. For food, store and refrigerate your food properly. As the weather gets warmer, as the air gets warmer, humidity increases, and that can lead to more spoilage of food. Wash your produce thoroughly. Very important. Industrial agriculture is using more and more pesticides and chemicals. The government is allowing them to use these chemicals. It's getting on our food, so it's really important to make sure you wash them off as best that you can. Buy local produce and protein. That minimizes the necessity for long-term refrigeration. It also is better for our friends and neighbors who grow this food. Eat low on the food chain. As Michael Pollan, the author, might say, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And ensure adequate nutrition. Research from the U.S. Department of Agriculture is now showing that as carbon dioxide levels rise and heat levels rise, that affects nutrition in plants, especially in staple crops like rice, wheat, corn, and soybeans. Vitamins and also protein content goes down as these problems go on. For water, know where you're getting your drinking water. Many of us don't really think about it much, but it's important to know, especially if you have well water that can be easily contaminated from runoff, and also people can lose their water supply from a well. Consider filtered water for your drinking water. Keep an emergency supply of water. I think that's important to have an emergency supply in your home, and conserve water. And finally, for mental health, assess your risks for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and anxiety. And for people who have a history of mental health conditions, it's important to know that there may be exacerbations along the way. Observe children closely for mental health issues. They manifest things much differently than adults, and it's very easy actually to miss when a child is struggling with anxiety and depression. Don't miss doses of medications, and again, stay cool, hydrated, fed, and connected with others. It's very important to stay connected with each other. So we talked about climate change in 10 words. Experts agree. It's real. It's us. It's bad. But the good news is there's hope, and we shouldn't lose that hope. We have the solutions at hand. Larry talked about some of those solutions, and I want to talk about them in practical terms about what each of us can be doing starting today. The solutions to the global climate crisis are exactly the same as the solutions to reduce pollution and improve public health. The guiding principles that we just need to get on board and understand is that we need to reduce and eliminate fossil fuel consumption as soon as possible. Scientists say that we need to cut our fossil fuel consumption and greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030, which is less than 12 years from now. So we need to get on the horn and get that going. We need to completely eliminate greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, which is 32 years. Again, not a very long time. By doing that, we need to electrify everything with renewable energy, primarily, but not exclusively, solar and wind. We need to replace plastic with new materials. We need a materials revolution in the United States and around the world. Making plastic, we make plastic by fracking. And fracking for plastic is not sustainable, and it accelerates climate change. We need to reuse and recycle. We need to conserve more. It's not a dirty word, conservation. We need to consume less. We'll reduce energy consumption and waste at home and at work by buying energy-efficient appliances and lighting. We'll turn off our unused lights and appliances when we're not using them. We'll improve our home insulation, adjust thermostats a bit, buy and use less plastic. We'll encourage renewable energy solutions. We have to do that. One way to start is to go online and with your power company and change your electricity provider. It's one of the easiest things that you can do. Find a provider that provides electricity through wind and solar. You'll probably end up saving a little bit of money as well. Conserve water. Fix your leaky faucets. If you're in a public building and you see a leaky faucet, please report it. One of the most impactful things all of us can do is eat less beef. Okay, I'm not here saying that you have to stop eating your hamburgers, but we could all eat less beef. And I'll tell you that your internist, your pediatrician, your cardiologist your oncologist will be happy, because eating beef, it turns out, is not the healthiest thing for us to be doing anyway. But from a climate change perspective, we really need to reduce emissions. That's a very impactful way to do that. Eat real food, not processed food. Processed food, which is, again, not real food, takes a lot of energy to produce. Eat local. Know where your food is grown. Reduce those transportation costs, those fuel costs for transportation. Waste less food. In the United States, Americans waste 30 to 40% of the food that we produce. That's unacceptable, and that has to change. And I'll say this 100 times, but only once here, avoid single-use plastic bottles and utensils. Please, please, it's so important. For our cars, the next car that you buy will be more efficient than the last. In 10 years, we're all going to be driving electric vehicles because we need to solve climate change, but also it's going to be more economical for us to do so. So that's important as well. If it can come sooner, that's even better. Get involved. All of us, we need to keep learning. We need to talk to and educate others. We need to call, write to, and meet with our lawmakers, who are available, actually. They're not all, you know, evil people. A lot of them, even if you disagree with their policies, they're really in it to try to do the right thing, even if you have to tell them what the right thing is. And you should tell them what the right thing is. Advocate for a price on carbon. Insist on sensible environmental protections, which is not what's happening right now. And demand policies based on evidence. Protect grasslands, wetlands, and forests. Plant trees. That's going to be a big part of the solution to increase our carbon sinks. Help vulnerable family members, friends, and neighbors adapt, like we were just talking about before. And support an environmental or public health group. I have lots of ideas for you. We can talk about that later if you like. Make every day Earth Day. Renew and preserve your connection to the natural world. We've kind of lost it, and that's a shame, but it's not difficult to renew. And I tell everybody, I don't think I have to tell anybody here, but young people, I have to constantly tell that this is one of the most important things to do to solve the climate crisis. 40 years from now, children will live in a world shaped by our choices. Are we going to choose this? This is business as usual. I should probably have a picture of the cracker plant right here. Are we going to choose this? More illness for our children and our grandchildren. Are we going to choose this? A world where by 2050, scientists are telling us that there's going to be more plastic in the ocean than fish. Are we just going to bury our heads in the sand, pretend none of this is happening, and just play through? In the end, we have one choice to make. We will leave this place an empty stone, or that shining ball of blue we can call our home. Again, thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. Stay cool. There you go. The light is on.
Hello?
Yeah,
it does work. Okay, we have, according to my watch, about 5 minutes, which isn't very much, but it's time for questions. If you have a question of either of these gentlemen on what has been said, please raise your hand. I'll bring you the microphone.
Let's go here. I'm biased, but I thought this was excellent. I would appreciate it if you could give us a handout on those resources, because then we can follow up.
So I think we're going to put them on the website.
That's right.
So they'll be available. The presentations will be on.
We tried to print the slides, but we had some technical difficulties. So they will be on the website, though. I believe so. Yeah. Yes. Other.
Yeah. What portion of the U.S. population agrees with your basic premises?
That's a great question, because there have been some surveys over the past 2 and 3 years that have shown the Yale Program on Climate Communication does these surveys. most recently, more than 70% of Americans believe that climate change is happening now. And a majority of people, I want to say 56% of Americans, believe that it's us that's causing climate change. The problem is that a lot of people feel like climate change isn't really affecting them. And that's, you know, you just step outside today, yes, climate change is affecting you. We've had heat waves before. We're going to have heat waves in the future, but climate change means that these heat waves are going to be more common and they're going to last longer. So that's important. You know, almost 80% of Americans in this survey want their schools to be teaching children and grandchildren about climate change, about the impacts, the causes, and the solutions. So that's important. Only 30% of us or so talk to our friends and neighbors about it. So even though we think it's a problem, a lot of people are concerned about it, we're not talking nearly enough about it. And it's important because we're all part of the problem, but we're also all part of the solution.
Do you have a comment? Other questions? All right, well, this has been absolutely wonderful. My mind is, I'm overwhelmed.
Sorry.
No, that was great. It was really good to hear all of that, and we're really grateful for both of you being here. We have an awful lot to think about. So, and particularly, I think it comes to us as part of our moral duty, really. So, again, let's thank both gentlemen.